You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Welcome to Brian Callen Show. I have Jason Selk, who wrote 10 Minute Toughness. And if you guys listen to the podcast, I read a lot of books, but I talk about this book an awful lot. I think it's an important book. Jason, you're a sports psychologist. You work with a lot of athletes, obviously.
Yes.
And what got you to write this book in particular? I mean, because there's a lot of stuff out there. And what I really appreciated is that it's such an abbreviated sort of, 10-minute toughness is how you talk to yourself.
It's a really good question. And what really got me thinking about writing this book was when I was just finishing graduate school. In fact, I was out of my deck preparing for oral exams. If you're not familiar with that, it's a week-long, 6 to 8 hours a day of testing over everything you've learned in graduate school. It's really quite ridiculous and quite grueling. And I had this thought in the midst of trying to study for everything. I thought, okay, well, I'm about to get out of graduate school here. I've spent a lot of time and a lot of money getting to where I am right now. What am I going to do to actually make some of this money back? Like, what am I going to sell? I got all this information in my head, but I didn't really have a game plan of how I was going to get a return on that investment. So I thought to myself, and I'd had a pretty extensive amount of time spent as an athlete, and I've done my fair share of coaching as well, and I thought, okay.
I was going to ask you that. I'm glad you said that, because that's what it felt like.
So I kind of know that world, and I thought to myself, okay, if I was an athlete or if I was a coach, what would I buy in terms of sports psychology or the things I was learned about performance psychology? And I started thinking, well, mental toughness seems to be this thing that everybody wants. And then I thought, well, what really is mental toughness? And I said, well, what's physical toughness? How do you get it? And I thought, okay, you get your physical toughness by going to see a trainer, and you do 6 sets of this and 8 sets of that, and you can't stop from getting your biceps stronger. Okay, well, that'd be nice if we could do it for the brain. And I knew, like I said, I had all this research literally surrounding me at this point out on my deck that day, and I thought, well, I got all this knowledge of the brain just like a muscle, like the bicep is, and how could you work or exercise the brain in a way that if you did it, you couldn't help but develop that mental toughness, improve focus, improve confidence. And it just so happened that I had all this information at my fingertips right there that day, and I wrote the mental workout, the program, the first 5 chapters of 10-Minute Toughness in about 45 minutes. And I had one of my good friends I grew up with, he played baseball for the Houston Astros, and I called him up and said, hey, I think I just came up with something pretty good here. Will you try this out? And he went on a 3-week tear of hitting the ball in baseball. And, from there it was kind of took off real fast because he started telling a number of his teammates, and then it went from Major League Baseball, the NFL, and then the NBA. And
you got the baseball thing is great, like kind of try easier, look away. It was like sort of a look away, go away, or something like that. I mean, just so many different, like, of these little things of how to talk to yourself that really do. I mean, it doesn't just work with athletes, man. I think it works with everything. I'm a performer. I get out of my own way. So much of what I love about the book is kind of what not to think about. A lot of mental toughness is learning what not to think about, right? What not to indulge in.
You're right. And, unfortunately, we as humans, we have this propensity to complicate things. We try to be perfect. We try to get all the right thoughts. We try to get everything done. We try to be everything to everyone. It's just not possible. I mean, there's just no possible way. So what you have to do is you really have to become good at prioritizing. And I think that's one of the things I've been fairly good at in my career is simplify this stuff all the way down, where we know we're not going to be great at everything. So let's be great at the really important things. And I think that's where some of the tools I teach, I'm not going to try to teach people everything I learned in graduate school or along the way. I'm just going to teach you the top tools, the ones that will give you the biggest bang for your buck. And then I'm going to create the kind of that bare minimum of greatness in terms of how much you need to do it to get a result. And I really believe in that simplicity approach, and it seems to have worked out pretty well.
But the problem is sometimes people will see a sports psychologist. I know a lot of pro athletes, and especially fighters, and sometimes they'll get into this situation where they go and see a sports psychologist, and they're seeing them every day. And what happens is you can create – how do you get out of the sort of the – they can actually cause a bigger problem, which is a dependency on this stuff. And all of a sudden they're going there and they're thinking about all these things of, well, I can't think about this. It's like, don't think about an elephant. Don't think about an elephant.
That's right. This is one of the things I learned from the greatest coach of all time, John Wooden. He taught me the number one error coaches make, and sports psychologists are coaches. We're mental coaches. The number one error coaches make is coaches try to overcoach. You know, your ego gets in the way, and you start to think you're not important if you're not teaching them something new every day. And you know what? I'm not going to let my ego get in the way, and you're exactly right. You start throwing too much at people, and it's too overwhelming, and then they start thinking that there's a dependence there, and then you haven't done your job as a coach. Your coach is to teach the athlete how to walk on their own two feet at a higher level than if they weren't working with you. But part of that is you got to take the training wheels off for them, meaning you got to teach them to walk on their own, not to have a dependence for you. You know, so one of the things I try to do is when people come in to see me, I say, okay, what's the goal for not having to come in here? You know, I want to know what your goal is, what's your learning goal, and then how long are we going to allow you to keep coming in here? Because I don't want to work with people 2, 3, 4 years in a row. I want to get them in and get them out so they can go do it on their own. If they need something, they can always call, but I don't want that dependence. And again, I think it's normal. I'm not trying to badmouth the coaches out there that are doing it. I have to work very hard at not overcoaching myself, but I think the big thing is you got to be aware of that. That's our biggest issue as coaches. We try to overcoach.
Well, the other thing that occurred to me as I read the book was that, and it's not just for athletes, most of us don't know how to talk to ourselves. You know, you've got to be and learn how to talk to yourself if you want to be good at anything. I think the reason I think 10-Minute Toughness is great, not just for athletes, but for performers and for people in their everyday lives, is that it enables you to learn how to motivate yourself, how to talk to yourself. We usually talk, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my experience with people and with myself, I've gotten better at it over the years, but most of us, I don't know if we're predisposed to do this, but we talk to ourselves the wrong way. We don't ask ourselves empowering questions. We ask ourselves questions like, what if I fail? Am I good enough? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and you got to understand there's a biological predisposition there. Our brains are built with something called PCT, problem-centric thought, and that's the biological tendency to focus on the things we're screwing up on, the problems we're having. It's biologically built in. Now, the good thing is you can retrain that. Neuroplasticity, it's a science that proves we can actually retrain our brains so that our brains don't search for the things we're screwing up on, but search for the things we're doing well. So, you know, there's a number of steps involved. The first thing is you got to start taking inventory. You know, listen to how you're talking to yourself. And you're right. I think most people, it's just incredibly normal to talk to ourselves about ourselves in a negative way. And that's a real shame, because that beating of ourselves, you know, when you're beating yourself up in your head, it's just a really bad thing for your self-confidence and your self-image. And that's a really powerful thing to be screwing up with. All right. Now, the second thing is you kind of make this rule. And the rule is, moving forward, don't give yourself a free pass. Don't give yourself permission from now on to talk to yourself about yourself in a negative way. Just don't allow it. Don't, if you catch yourself saying negative things, just stop it. Don't say the negative stuff. All right, now the third step is, and this is where that mental workout comes in, you start practicing saying positive things to yourself. Now, how abnormal is that? Okay, and that's the thing is, if every day you spend a little time just working on saying the right things to yourself, it becomes easier and easier to recognize when you're saying the wrong things and to replace those wrong things with the right things. But again, it's not easy. It's totally abnormal to be mentally tough. You have to work at it.
Well, give us an example of what you could say. I know it varies from person to person, but give us an example of what's something to say.
I'll give you a real-life example from myself. All right, so when I first get out of graduate school, I was lazy and I didn't have any experience. I didn't really know what was going to work and what wasn't going to work, other than what I'd kind of learned from science, but you never know what in reality. Okay, so the truth of the matter was I wasn't that hard of a worker and I didn't really know how to be a great sports psychologist. All right, so this is something, it's called my identity statement. It was one of those 5 steps that I had in that mental workout. So I'd say to myself every day these exact words. I outwork the competition every day. I'm the most effective sports psychology consultant in the world. Every day I'd be telling myself that. And every day when I'd catch myself saying negative things about myself, I'd try to replace it with that statement. Mm. Okay, well, somewhere along the way, I had said that to myself so many times, I actually started to believe it. I started to believe that I was this great worker and that I was really good at my job, maybe one of the best in the world. And once I started believing it, that's when the real power set in, because then when I wasn't performing up to par with that statement, I was kicking myself in the butt and getting myself moving, working harder. When I was screwing up with my clients, I was figuring out, okay, what do I need to do? Because if I'm one of the best in the world, I can't be screwing up with these guys. So I'd, you know, get to work on it, figure out different things. And that's what I mean. And we learned this from Maxwell Maltz. He writes that book in 1960, Psycho-Cybernetics, comes up with, for the first time, the concept of self-image. And in that book, he identifies self-image is essentially how we view ourselves, mm-hmm. All right, what we think we're capable of. And what he also tells us is a person does not outperform, nor will they underperform their self-image for long. Extremely groundbreaking research. And this is the thing, is you can't disprove this. It might sound a little corny. I thought it was corny when I first read it. But this is absolute empirical research. Cannot be disproved. If anything, it's understated. And what Maltz finds is a person's self-image is determined by what we say to ourselves about ourselves consistently over time. So think about that.
It makes sense to me because so much of our self-image is predicated on and based on what people have told us about ourselves. I mean,
and that negative stuff we're telling ourselves about ourselves.
Right.
And that's the thing is, remember, you're not going to outperform your self-image or underperform it for long. So the key with self-image is, it's great to realize this, it's not based on reality, it's based on desire. I wasn't a very hard worker, and I wasn't a very good sports psychologist, but I wanted to be. And I kept telling myself until I believed it, and once I believed it, then I became it. You know, and you could make an argument that, you know, even these days, I don't know that I get outworked. And you can make an argument that I'm one of the top sports psychologists in the world. A lot of people might agree with that at this point.
Well, I would say, though, you have to couple it with something, which is what you've done. It's one thing to tell yourself that, but there is something called, I mean, you know, when you got to be careful with just positive talk and positive thinking. You've also you've got to have critical thinking. What you've done in the book is you've also backed it up with work. Now you kept yourself motivated, I'm sure, with that kind of talk to give yourself the book. But there was a lot of work that went into this and a lot of data and empirical research that went into 10-Minute Toughness. That's what I like about it. So, yes, I would say that, you know, you told yourself you're one of the most effective sports psychologists in the world. I can believe that just based on the book. But you also had to write the book.
That's right. And that's where that process section comes in, where, okay, you get your mind right, you start saying the right things to yourself, and you do some positive visualization, good. That's a good foundation. Now what you got to do is you got to figure out, okay, what's best in the world look like, or what's the equivalent of your goal? What are you trying to achieve? And then the most important thing, what are those two or three most important activities every day that you have to get your butt up out of the chair and go do? Nobody's going to give you greatness. You're going to have to go fight and take it. Mm-hmm. And that's the process focus. You know, and if you've read 10 Minute Toughness, you know how much I believe in the importance of process. You know, again, something I learned from great coach John Wooden. It's all about the effort. If you have the effort there, the results will take care of themselves.
And keeping it simple, too, right? Right? I mean, talk a little bit more about process in that sense. Because Wooden, in the book and stuff, Wooden is really a guy who worked on fundamentals. And also, like, things like just the routine, putting the team first, those things that are not so glamorous, but he kept you sort of... I don't know how to sort of describe it, but it's sort of taking the magic out of the whole thing, but working on your fundamentals, keeping it simple, keeping it, you know, it's not like you have to practice 8 hours a day. You got to practice smart.
That's right. And I think you're using the right word. It's the fundamentals. Okay. And this is what we find with something called channel capacity. That channel capacity is really how much a human being has the potential for in terms of bandwidth from a mental standpoint. One of the biggest issues is we think, or we get caught up thinking, that we have to train the hardest stuff for 8 hours every single day. That's not it at all. In fact, you try to do that, and at some point you're going to fail because you can't keep that up forever. You can't be perfect. All right. So we talk really in great depth about When it comes to process, you're only allowed to identify your three. That's channel capacity. The magic number there is three with human beings. So you get your three most important activities every day. So from a basketball standpoint, you know, work on dribbling, passing, and shooting. You train those three things at a mastery level every day. You're going to probably put a team out on the floor that's going to win more than they're going to lose. All right, well, in business or in other sports, you got to find out what are your top three most important activities daily. And then those three, those are non-negotiables. You got to get those done no matter what. No excuse. You got to find a way to get those three done. And then you do the best that you can with the rest of the time you have. But for sure, every single day, you've got to get those three most important activities done if you want to achieve those great goals that people set for themselves.
There are a lot of, you know, great writers that talk about this. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who won a Nobel Prize, said that from 12 to 4, I think it is, no matter what he wrote, no matter what, that's when he would write. And the secret, and I've heard a lot of writers, not just in sports, who say the secret is writing every single day. Now, that could be 500 words, whatever it is, but they do that every day. So those are your, but why the three? Why the three things? That's what human beings have the capacity for? Explain that a little
bit.
That's
right. You start, think of it like this. I want you to think of it like this, Brian. We're kind of like jugglers, that if you give us three balls, we can juggle the three balls. Okay, now if you give someone a fourth ball, what typically happens, unless they're a professional juggler?
It drops, yeah.
They drop all the balls.
Yes.
That's channel capacity. That's what happens with our brains. So it's the equivalent of, I'm sure we've all had that experience, you are overwhelmed with all the things you have to do.
Yes.
You've got so many things you've got to get done in a single day, you think to yourself, I can't believe how much I have to get done. Can you believe how much that I have to get done today? I'm so overwhelmed. Now, the whole time you're thinking about how overwhelmed you are, you know what you're not doing?
The things you got to do, yeah.
You're not getting anything done.
Yes.
And that's what I mean by channel capacity. You start piling on more than three most important activities daily. And what happens is people start dropping all the balls.
That's awesome. That's so awesome. I love that simplicity. I love just the that's something people can work with. You know, that's why we don't have a lot of time, and maybe we don't need a lot of time to get ourselves, our heads right. I mean, if you need more than 10 minutes, why did you call it 10-minute toughness?
Well, if you go through the book and you figure out, okay, it really only takes about 10 minutes to complete those mental exercises.
Right.
When you're talking about the mental workout taking 3 minutes and 40 seconds and couple in RSF, and then the fact that you're reviewing your process. Remember, the way I have you just evaluate your process is answering those success log questions. But here's what we found. Unless you're a professional athlete, your three process goals, on average, take people somewhere between 2.5 to 3 hours each day. And that carries over into business. That was a lot of the research I did for my second book, Executive Toughness, in the business world, that what most people, again, professional athletes, a little bit different, okay, and it all depends on the sport, but unless you're a professional athlete, on average, it only takes you about 2.5 to 3 hours each day to get your absolute three most important things done each day.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if every day you completed your three most important activities. Can you just imagine if you did that every day where your level of success would be?
It's unbelievable.
You know
what, Jason, I talked to my buddy who's a very successful guy. And a pretty famous guy. And I said, you seem to work really hard. And he kind of wrinkled his nose and he shook his head and he goes, man, I just show up every day. And you'd be amazed if you show up every day in 2 years, how much better you are at something.
There's no doubt about it. And there's this quote I heard by Stephen Covey. It really governs a lot of the work that I do. He said, the noise of the urgent creates the illusion of importance.
Yeah.
And man, is that true, especially these days with all the technology. You know, we get caught up in answering those emails and returning those phone calls and text messages and all that stuff. And what the expense of it is we forget to do the most important stuff. I'm not saying that the urgent stuff shouldn't be done, that you shouldn't return phone calls or emails. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying it should never be done in front of the most important stuff each day.
The three most important things. Get those,
that's right.
Isolate what those are and get them done. What was the idea? Did the fact that it only takes 10 minutes to get your head right surprise you as you did this sort of research and you studied this and you wrote this book?
Um, Yeah, yes, but I also was trying to force it. You know, I know from a mental standpoint, people aren't going to put a lot of time into this. You know, I knew that. And like, for instance, with the mental workout, my first run at the mental workout, it was like 5 minutes and 40 seconds. And I just knew. I said, you know what? If I try to tell somebody every day they got to spend 5 minutes and 40 seconds doing this mental workout, they're not going to do it long term. Mm. So I knew I had to get the thing trimmed down. And so it surprised me that it was doable, but I knew that if people were going to buy in and actually kind of start getting this, all right, these are the steps, this is exactly what to do, and yeah, I'm going to actually commit to doing it, I knew that I had to get that thing as lean and mean as possible.
Mm. Well, that's all we have time for, man. Is there a primary question, do you think, that people walk around with in their heads? Do you find that a lot? Do you ever have to isolate that? Do you have to, as opposed to kind of like, I've heard that, yes, you know, you learn how to talk to yourself and things, but then there's also the other side. Are you supposed to ask yourself questions? Because I notice that most people, when I ask them, and I can tell, people come to me and they say, you know, I got this, that, and it, and they're not living their lives the way they want to. And sometimes I'll say to them, what are you really after, first of all? And second of all, what do you think is the main question you ask yourself? It's almost always a negative question, which we've already talked
about.
Yeah,
I was going to say, well, I'll tell you what, unfortunately, I think the kind of question in most people's heads is, what am I screwing up on? What's wrong with me? I think that's the question most people ask. What should it be? I'd say these are the questions I really like. One, what am I doing well? I want to know, and I'm not talking about throwing yourself a parade or anything like that. Just give yourself a little pat on the back. Give credit where due. Find something you're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something as simple as, like this morning, my alarm went off at 5. I had 2 feet on the floor by 5:01. I call that beating the alarm. I scored a point. You know, nobody's going to be cured of cancer because Jason Selk had 2 feet on the floor by 5:01. But you know what? It's a good thing that I did. Mm-hmm. I feel good about being productive. When my alarm goes off, I get up. All right, second question. What's one thing I want to improve? You know, if you could get those two questions in your head, man alive. Yep. What am I doing well, and what do I want to improve? Think how much further along in life you'd be if that was in your head instead of all the negative stuff that goes on in there.
I love that. What am I doing well, and what? Yeah, that's that. And what? How can I? What can I improve? Those are two fantastic questions, and we don't ask them. We don't ask them. We get really busy really quickly with all the noise. That's right. And pretty soon, I feel like your life isn't your own.
Now, that can happen, but I'll tell you what, some people ask them. I know I do, and the people I work with, I'm relentless about making sure they're asking those questions. They got to ask them every single day. What three things am I doing well? Take 60 seconds and figure that out. Again, you don't have to cure cancer for it to qualify. And then what's one thing you want to improve? Not one thing you want to perfect, one thing you want to make 1 inch better. The smallest unit of measure, improvement, I'll take that. We're not looking for perfection. You can train yourself to ask those questions, and if you do, I'm telling you, great things can happen. That's where people start overachieving.
I love that. I love it. It's so inspiring to think about that. Just the idea that's literally all it takes. Because what's the biggest curse, and I know this is a huge, you know, challenge for you. Yes, you can attack a problem, but it's the consistency, man. It's reminding yourself every day. It's that long term. And really, what we're talking about here is habit, aren't we? I mean, these things become a habit after a while.
Yep, that's right. If you force it. Remember, it's not, unfortunately, that 21 days to a habit thing, that's a total myth. It was unfortunately based on a misinterpretation of research. There's no truth in it whatsoever. So it's, you know, you're continually forming the habits. It's commitment. You know, what are you going to commit to? What are your fundamentals? The two or three most important things you're going to commit to. Make sure those are done. Do the best you can on the other stuff, but no matter what, get your most important stuff done daily. Get those habits done.
And the other thing that I gleaned from the book was really, in a lot of ways, it's almost like 10-minute toughness was almost sort of a manual for how to get out of your own way, too. I mean, there comes a point when your training can take over, and a lot of it is just, like, I love that where you say, I think, what is it you said to the baseball player, which the end is go away? Maybe you don't remember, but anyway, get out of the way. I do that with my stand up. I come up on stage now, and like somebody asked me, I had to perform for like 2,700 people, and somebody said, "Were you nervous?" And it didn't even occur to me, because I've learned how to, I've been doing it for so long. I've learned how to kind of get out of my own way, man. It's, I'm up there to have an experience and I don't know what's going to happen. I'm certainly not going to force anything, but that took me a long time to get in that, into that sort of that mindset, you know, let me get out of my own way. And every day for me, what I got, you know, I use this as a stand-up comic. It might seem weird, but you know, as, but I use 10-minute toughness because I learned how to kind of talk to myself that way. Kind of, well, that's how I, you know, motivate myself.
Yeah, I don't think it sounds weird at all. And I'll tell you another thing. It's one thing I think is really important, and you've touched on it a few times. Simplicity is genius. Mm-hmm. Genius is simplicity. You know, and we just have this tendency. We want to complicate things. There's no need. It's all about the fundamentals.
Yeah, and those three important things. That's what I've been thinking about since you said it. Because, you know, and again, I think I've read the book twice, and I've talked about it a lot. And it's just one of those things where you just got to keep coming. So, you know, it's a book you can keep with you and just always remind yourself. Because, you know.
And I'll tell you, I think executive toughness is, unless you're a professional athlete, I think executive toughness is a much better book than 10-minute toughness. And I love 10-minute toughness, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
That book I wrote for professional athletes, but my second book I think is a better book, unless you're a professional athlete. I challenge you, check out the second book. If you like it, bring me back on. We'll talk about that one.
I promise you I'm going to read it, and I will bring you back on. And we very much appreciate having you on. Give me very quickly before I let you go, what is the fundamental difference between executive toughness and 10-minute toughness?
Executive toughness is really written for life and business, whereas 10-minute toughness, it's the exact mental training program I use with my professional athletes.
Great.
So unless you're a professional athlete, that book really wasn't written for you. Executive toughness is written for you, unless you're a professional athlete.
Done. I'm reading it. I'm getting you back on, my friend. I know you're a busy guy, and I really appreciate you making time.
My pleasure. Go get him out there.
I will. Thanks a lot, Jason Selk, ladies and gentlemen. This book is 10-Minute Toughness and then Executive Toughness. That was a short but important podcast. To the point. You know, look, it's 10-minute. Oh, it should have been a 10-minute podcast, but I already have one of those. All right, everybody. Brian Callen, out.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.